This is the Creative Sports Podcast. My name is Justin Peterson. Joining me are Brock Rahm.
Garrett, the only thing we screwed up here is I don't think either of us said anything funny for the intro. Can you say something funny?
And Garrett Wright.
I don't really have anything funny today. I'm just not funny.
By now, you've probably heard that the rules are changing for NIL, or name, image, likeness. But how does it impact the creative content space, and how do you evaluate what athlete channels are worth? We dive headfirst into this conversation with Blake Lawrence, a fellow Husker and the CEO of Open Doors.
Are you guys recording?
All right.
Hey, what's going on? It's Justin. Just wanted to give a shout out to APM for providing the track for us here on the Creative Sports Podcast. We're doing this podcast as an extension of the sports creative community on Slack. So if you're finding us and aren't a member of the community yet, you can sign up for free at sportscreativeslack.com.
Excited to be joined by Blake Lawrence today. Blake is the CEO and co-founder of Open Doors. A lot of people who listen to this podcast probably know of his company, if not know directly of Blake. Little story, little aside, Blake was one of my first clients. His company, his old company, Herd Dat, when I started 2010 Productions straight out of college, we were doing a lot of small motion graphic works, brand type videos, and Blake, for some reason, decided to give us money to make a video for him. I didn't make any of it. My business partner, Matt Turner, did. He did a good job. It's still out there on the internet somewhere. So I'm always thankful to Blake for helping me pay my rent for a little bit. But Blake, thanks for coming on. Happy to have you.
Hey, bro, I didn't have much money back then either, man. We were trading ramen noodles.
I know.
But just a couple Huskers and a dream of having an impact. And now look a decade later, proud of where we come from. And it's also moments like that where you gave us some support, you know, and probably a discount that we didn't deserve. But that's how this industry is. And it's good people helping good people. And if you love it and you give to it, you're going to get a lot out of it. So I appreciate you doing that. I'm happy to be on the show.
Oh yeah. We appreciated you. So I mentioned that company, Herd Dat. That was the first company that you started out of college before Open Doors, right? Open Doors wasn't a thing when Herd Dat initially started, correct?
Right. Yep.
So why don't you kind of go through what was that transition like? You get out of college and you decide that you want to start a business and you want to focus on social media. What is that early day and that early transition look like?
Take you back. I mean, it's October, so about 11 years ago now. I wake up, I'm the starting linebacker at Nebraska, and go off to practice, and I go to bed that night knowing I could never play football again. Right. And for me, that is a moment like in my journey, but everyone that's listening has had a moment in their life where who they thought they were and who they're going to be is gone in an instant. You got to figure out what's next. Right. And so I don't think it's original or unique to me that you'd start to seek out like that other thing that maybe you put to the side because of how much you're focused on your main identity. And, you know, for me, it was entrepreneurship. I was a marketing undergrad. And, you know, at the time I was one of the first guys on the team using this website, twitter.com. And I'd built up a few hundred followers, maybe close to 1,000. And I thought, you know, I can't play in front of these fans anymore, but I can stay connected. And I started to trying to figure out why they're following me, like what I would say that would drive, get a couple of likes or get a retweet here and there. And then within a year, I had, you know, gotten hired to run social media for a local business and help them find success and just gave me an opportunity to dive even deeper into like, why do people engage with certain things online and others not? And then, again, less than a year I've just done playing football. Adi Kanalik, my business partner still today, teammate and roommate at Nebraska, we started Herd Dat, a social media agency, which is really, in 2010, a social media agency was a novel concept, Brock, you know that. And mm-hmm. Yeah, so it started to grow from there.
So you guys see some initial success with Herd Dat and then the transition to Open Doors. Did it happen because you guys had connections in the professional realm professional athletics realm that you saw this market gap where there was a need that needed to be filled?
Yeah, well, I would say that. So to tell you about Herdat, Herdat was a social media factory, a content factory, right? Like, So what we had found out is that these local businesses, they wanted to have a presence on Twitter, on Facebook, on you know, YouTube or LinkedIn, and they didn't have time to do it themselves. They didn't know how to use social media, and they weren't going to cough up the big bucks to pay an ad agency to do it. So they'd pay this cheap little startup social media agency, and we would blog, tweet, and Facebook all day. And, you know, we bootstrapped it from the two of us at 25 employees, and we sold it in 2014 to really focus on Open Doors. But the genesis for Open Doors, really, I could take you back to a phone call. And I know we're all Huskers here, so this should resonate. Bringing up old Prince Amukamara. Mm-hmm. Right? Yep. And Prince Amukamara is one of my best friends, got drafted in the first round 2011 NFL draft. And, you know, he went from 10,000 followers on his social channels to 100,000 overnight. And he called me and he asked three questions, and these three questions really became the foundation for what we do at Open Doors still here today, every single day. And not just for Prince, but for thousands of athletes around the world. And so what Prince asked in that phone call, and I'll pause, everyone that is listening that is working in social media and working in creative, like, you've gotten the same call from someone, right? It's very similar. And the first question he says, like, what is my audience worth? Right. You want to understand, I went from 10,000 to 100,000 followers. Like, what is this worth? What can I do with this? Right. So we started to answer that question. And the second question, he says, well, how do I grow my audience? Again, everyone here is like, how do I get more followers? I want to get my followers up. Right. And the third question was, how do I monetize my audience? Like, how do I turn these people who have opted in to hit follow into value for myself or something I care about? And, you know, as we started to answer those questions for Prince, we started to uncover some major differences in social media for athletes as it compared to businesses and brand accounts. And I'll tell you about those differences. But it was that call and those questions that sparked the need to build Open Doors, because we saw an absolute need in the market and a problem that we absolutely had to solve. You like that cliffhanger? Is anyone going to ask me what those what that was?
I thought it was just a pregnant pause, you know, for effect. That was fantastic. It's funny because I was going back through the website in preparation for this, and I saw Prince was on there. And Prince was obviously a very talented cornerback when we were all there. To get drafted in the first round is fantastic. But yeah, can you dive into those three questions a little bit more and helping him kind of was a great breeding ground for you guys?
Well, and that, again, I don't think that you might hear me say this a lot. I'm not unique in this situation. Every single one of you probably got that call and you started helping somebody that they served as a springboard into your next customer, your next partner. And again, that's how a lot of this works in the startup, creative, especially sports and social media environment. Like, you get one, you prove it right, you grow to the next one. And one of the things that we realized very on is answering the first question, what's my audience worth? So we had developed some processes to track and measure the detailed analytics of engagement rate, for businesses. And then we started to run prints through those same formulas. And we're like, this is nuts. Like his audience was 10 to 20 times more engaged with what he said than any business account we ever worked with. He was growing at a clip where he'd add more followers in a week than these businesses would add in a year, right? And it just wasn't fair. It's like social media was built for the athlete, you know? And it was like, wow, this is incredibly powerful. So what was the answer to how valuable is the audience? And the answer is like, it's very valuable, right? This is something that anyone would kill to have this type of engagement on their social channels. And then it came down to, you know, how do you grow your audience? And that's when we started to find a lot of the issues that today still plague the athlete marketing world, is that Prince didn't have many resources for him to get help with building up his social media audience. And, you know, he didn't, the teams that he played for weren't giving him photos and videos. His alma mater wasn't plugging him with Throwback Thursday content. Like, this is a decade ago, right? So the concept of media in the hands of athletes was completely foreign. Most teams were still trying to figure out how to get content into their own channels, not into the athlete's hands. This is like the TwitPic and YFrog days, you know? Like you can even put photos on Facebook. So, right? But we had to figure this out because we were sitting, it's like this guy, his window of opportunity could be a day or a decade in the league. And if he doesn't use everything at his disposal to capitalize on this, then he's going to miss out. And Audie and I knew that too well, that your career is shorter than you think. So we became obsessed with this concept of, okay, we can use some data to tell him what he's worth, but can we help him grow his audience? And can we use technology to help him monetize his audience? And that was really, as we started to look in the market, didn't see anything there. And so we built Open Doors.
So for you guys, you know, as you're building that platform, you know, that probably takes a little bit more than, you know, you and Audie are capable of on your own. You know, how did you start to kind of build that out technologically with a team and just, you know, how did you grow this company into someone or into a company that was able to service all of those needs, you know, just from what you and Audie started?
Right. So fortunately we had Herdat, which is a company we bootstrapped, but had recurring revenue, right? So people would pay us an annual agreement for us to run all of their social media channels. So that money was helping us kind of fund these experiments that were trying to build out technology. And we had gotten to a point where we had like 25 social media, businesses that were paying us, you know, on an annual basis. And it was getting tough for us to log into Twitter, log into this, and like, you know, TweetDeck was coming up and Hootsuite. But we had to have multiple layers of approval. So like we'd have a copywriter write copy, then they had to send it to an account manager who would then finally load it up. And so realizing that Hootsuite and all these places had these multi-layer approvals of content, we asked, like I put online, I said, we're looking to build software. I put on my Facebook page, like looking to build software. Don't know what that means, you know? And Brock caught when we were trying to build our first website, even, you know, like I used my social media presence to build this company. How interestingly ironic is that, right? Is it that's why I believe in this stuff so much, right? Is that without that, I don't meet Brock and we don't like get some of those early things doing like we needed to build our company. And so anyways, I put out in the ether to say, hey, we're trying to build software. And it was at first to build like a multi-layer approval system for social media copy creation and distribution, right? It was nothing to do with athletes. So we started tinkering. We had a local, you know, engineer and his buddy that he went to high school with start to work on this with us. And then, you know, this concept of once we ran into the Prince problem, of the most influential people in the world of sports don't have help and growing and monetizing their audience. Like we started to shift our resources into how can we leverage these people that have come and said, yeah, we'll tinker around and help you build software, into building software that would ultimately become the foundation for the athlete marketing and endorsement industry.
I think you used a real key word there in influence, and the word influencer was not really a thing back in 2010, 2011, 2012, 2013. But now influencer is a very normal part of a lot of people's vernacular. And influencer is really a full-time job. How much do you see professional athletes turning to the influencer side of their social media, or maybe they didn't realize they already were an influencer? And you talked about capitalizing that. I guess my roundabout question is here, what was it like capitalizing on that influencer status before being an influencer was a thing? And what's it like now in modern times for a professional athlete who's looking to capitalize in that influencer space?
What I'm about to say, I think, is very interesting when you think about athletes versus influencers, athletes as influencers, that sort of thing. Okay. And in the early days, 2012, like when we started to get into this world of like getting athletes paid to say things online, like influencer-ish activity, there were some parallels, like the mommy blogger and the athlete, like we're kind of level playing field. And then the fashion blogger, travel blogger, you know, whatever it is, the comedian, the creator, like they were on the same playing field. And then as the creator economy, influencer economy, like took off, regular influencers left athletes behind, like destroyed them, right? Athletes are stuck in this interesting place, guys, where statistically, if you look at the data, they're the most influential people on the planet, some of them, right? And we're living in the era of athlete empowerment, where if an athlete says something, they can they can move mountains, man. Like what they stand for, what they sit for, what they kneel for matters in our culture in a different way than like your favorite comedian does, right? Like in a different way than your favorite travel blogger does. Like they can, you're, those types of influencers, they have a place in your mind and your heart, and they're definitely have a place in your social media feed, right? But athletes are the only people with the level of influence they have on the planet that are not natural marketers, okay? You don't follow the best traveler. You follow the best traveler that can market themselves, right? You don't follow the most fashionable person. You follow the person that can market themselves that happens to care about fashion, right? And so like everyone that you follow that is an influencer is a marketer first, and they just picked a category to be influential in. Athletes sit here and they have as many followers, as much of an engaged audience, and they don't even know what to say, when to say it, where to say it, how to say it on social, right? The average athlete shares 6 pieces of content a month on social. The average influencer will share 6 a day. The average sports team shares 30 a day, okay? So athletes are way behind in terms of content creation, and it's interesting because they also don't have the rights to the content they create. Right? It is sitting there, like you guys capture amazing content that athletes, that they don't have the license rights to actually leverage and distribute on their own social channels. And I don't know, so I'm getting long winded with this concept, but I think the market needs to understand that if there's one last untapped distribution network in sports, it is that of the athlete. And I believe it will be the most powerful, once it is fully maximized, but we are so far from that point today that I look forward to this next decade of more creators leaning in and helping athletes make the most of their audience, their channels, because candidly, they do need the most help, but they also have the most upside. And that's kind of where we sit as a company, is trying to connect all those parties and make sure that everybody wins.
And that's kind of what I was going to ask. You got into my question there at the end, but you know, there, with there being so much untapped potential, you know, what does that look like? Obviously NIL is a big step in that for college athletics, but you know, even just across the sports landscape, what does that look like to empower athletes and to give them that opportunity, and how do they grow their opportunities over the next 5, 10, 20 years in this space?
Yeah. So, I think that, again, thinking about the audience that's listening in here, athletes are at the center of the content you capture and create. Like, what would it mean for every athlete to have access to the media in which they're featured within and free license to publish where and when and how they want? And not license and not give credit, right? But like, let's set up a world where if you take that photo and the athlete shares it, then he shows you love and props, right? Not that they're getting sued, right? But they at least you're coaching them and advising them, because I get it. If you want to sue a team, because a team knows better, right? But an athlete sees a photo of them online, they want to use it because they want to use it to tell their story, to help engage your audience. Like, we should applaud and empower athletes again to lean into this. So I want you to envision a world by the end of the decade that if you go to an athlete's social channel, social handle, it will feel like a channel, like a sports media channel. Right? Where this is where you go to figure out their workout routine. This is where you go to see what they're thinking pregame. This is where you go to see the highlights after the game, right? And those athletes are getting access to the content they create to make the most of this small window of opportunity they have to be center stage in the lives of the community in which that, you know, they work their ass off to play for. And so that's the future. I see that we're in the early stages. I mean, I'm a decade into this is all I've done, guys. My life's work is in helping. We just hit 25,000 athletes this weekend, right?
Wow. Congratulations.
Yeah. Freaking sweet. But it started with one. But if you put the athlete in the middle and say like, how do we help them? Then you're going to find success. So I guess that's a winding answer to your question, but the future looks good. And I think the market is ready for it. And the people in the market are going to win when they start to include athletes as a part of the plan versus an afterthought.
I think you talked about the shift that's happening in a lot of, I'm going to speak from a college perspective because that was my most recent job before I went to Beck. But I think from a college perspective, that's going to be the biggest shift away from, okay, we're caring about the overarching team's brand and the coaches in charge of the team's brand, to here are individual athletes' brands and how do we help grow their brands in conjunction with the university's brand, with the college's brand. At Notre Dame, we ran into an issue, and it wasn't an issue. When this NIL stuff came out, there was a lot of excitement around it because Notre Dame's athletics director, Jack Swarbrick, had always pushed for more name, image, and likeness rights to student athletes. He's kind of been on the forefront of that. So there was a lot of excitement, and there's a lot of uncertainty. But we had a high school kid who would go out and he'd shoot a little bit of practice. He got credentialed. He'd take our footage from games, and he would make hypes for the players. Right. And they would take it and they would post it on their social channels with copyrighted music. And we sat here and said the initial reaction from a content creator in a department like that is like, oh, well, how dare they steal our footage? You know, how dare they interact with our student athletes directly? And then it was, well, he's giving them a service that we're not providing. Right. And I think a lot more colleges are waking up to that of, okay, this is a service that our athletes want and need, and they want to be able to build their brand. So how do we provide that to them and how do we help them with that? That's a long way around of asking my question of, and I know I'm sure you get this question all the time, but how is name, image, and likeness going to impact, from your perspective, the creators that listen to our podcast, that work in a collegiate environment, that all of a sudden are going to see student athletes building their brands in a way that's different than they've done their job before?
Oh my goodness. I mean, the name, image, and likeness, and the ability for athletic departments across the country to provide resources to help athletes build a brand and monetize in a compliant manner. The recruiting battle of the next decade will be built upon student athlete brand development. Right? Like that's just how it is, where it is. And if you think about this, I want you to visualize, okay? I want you to visualize, everyone has driven past a 24-hour fitness workout place recently, right? Driving down the street, you see it, and you see the equipment, and they're all waiting to get worked out on, okay? And then if you work in athletics, you've seen a weight room when you have a strength coach and six different strength, you know, coaches around them, like getting people prepared, okay? I want you to imagine that the shift that's going to happen in college athletics is like going from the, you know, 24-hour fitness, you know, gym where you just go in and just goof around. And when it comes to student athlete brand building and versus like a well-oiled machine, right? That your job is to come in here and produce some student athletes. Like, I'm going to stay on the strength analogy here. That win games, okay? And like, you know, if you go on a recruiting visit, you see a big weight room, it equates to something, right? And so now, like, the resources that schools will be putting into name, image, likeness, and personal brand building for student athletes will be similar to the moment when they figured out if you had a bigger weight room and better strength staff that you won more games, right? And so what that comes down to is that there's going to be more and more jobs on the creative side of helping individuals, like helping athletes create content, tell their story, because there will be an absolute reward for those athletes in that era, right? But there will be a major reward for the schools that lean in and invest in this heavily. So you're more likely to see, I know oftentimes there's like one social media content creator maybe per team now, like ticketed teams on big college campuses. Like you might have one per position group by the end of the decade, right? And their job is to simply help those athletes build up an audience that they can ultimately monetize, right? And crazy enough, guys, I believe there will be more creative resources for the brand development of student athletes than there will ever be for the brand development of professional athletes, because the compensation shifts, right? The only way that student athletes will be able to make money while they're in college over the next decade will be from their personal brand value. They're not going to get paychecks. They're going to get a contract, right? But the moment they shift to that next level, you guys have all seen it. Justin, you know, like when you get to the pros, like these guys are making so much bank that like, yeah, you want to help them, but you want to help them help you. You see the difference? Like when in college, creatives are going to help student athletes help themselves. And there's going to be a reward to that. So I guess where I see it going is that there will be more creatives than you can imagine. They'll be dedicated to helping athletes create content. And so they can build up an audience that ultimately they can monetize in a compliant way.
I think one of the most interesting conversations we had at Notre Dame when a lot of this came out was what may shift is the type of content we're helping our student athletes promote through their brand as well. We had the discussion of what if we have a student athlete who's a competitive Call of Duty player and they want to build their Twitch audience that's really outside of the purview of athletics and what they do on the field. But our answer was, yeah, we think we help them with that content, you know, and with that channel and with that marketing as a service to the student athlete as part of our job. So I think you're going to see a lot of shift in name, image, and likeness. Doesn't have to be strictly in the sports vertical, right? They may be interested in building, you know, influencing around other areas. You know, I think of somebody like in the pros, like a Travis Kelce, who's a big time fashion guy. I'm not into fashion, but Travis Kelce has some fantastic outfits. Cam Newton, great outfits, cool. Right? But they're really influencers on a side of the vertical that's outside of sports. So why would college athletics be any different? So I think you're going to see a lot of people shifting, and you're going to have a lot of horizontal movement in your role as a creator for a college on the types of contents and the different verticals you produce in.
Yeah. And what we see in the pro sports space is this fly on the wall type content really is something that the fans will lean into a lot more than you'd think, right? Because everybody wants that perspective that you have behind the lens, like behind the camera, but not necessarily the same stuff they've always seen, right? Like the walk between the locker room and the practice facility, that content right there is more valuable than the same catch that every sports fan has seen 25 times over with a different number and a different color on the jersey, right? Because they're going to peer into the lives of these student athletes. And like, that is something that if done properly will create a connection that is really hard to separate. And that's the personality side of this that athletes have that logos simply will never have in the world of sports.
I think you saw that with some content coming out of the bubble, right? In the NBA, you saw these guy like Matisse Thybulle, and I don't like to talk about him because he's on a rival team, but yeah. Just the him and JaVale McGee doing some vlogs, mm-hmm. You know, that grew their audience tenfold. A guy like Trevor Bauer in the MLB is, you know, really ratcheting up his content and recognizing this as well. So I guess when it comes down to helping build these brands for these student athletes, and we've all seen numbers, you know, in high school, there's a ton of athletes, you get to college and there's less athletes, and you get to the pros and there's even less athletes. So it seems like college is definitely a ripe market for all, you know, to help students stand out. I guess at what point do you feel that the creatives are really just going to be necessary and the investment. I mean, at what point is there a tipping point for people to recognize how valuable this is for that tipping point to happen where they start to hire a lot more people? Because there's so many people that have lack of resources. And we've talked about it on a previous podcast that just because you want to go out to Instagram and Twitter and YouTube, it's really difficult to do with the same video because they're all different platforms. So how do we buy into this resource allocation? Yeah,
certainly. And I think that, so one of the things that, let's talk about business model real quick, guys, like, because where we started with Open Doors and where we are today is completely different. Right. And when Prince asked me those questions, the first thing I said is, all right, I'll do it for you. Like, we will create your content for you. We'll push it out. Right. And we'll measure it. And like, that was the model, like pay us a monthly retainer and we'll create content for you. And you know what Prince said, fresh off a fat first round draft pick salary and contract? No, I'm good. Right?
Thanks, Prince. Okay.
Right. No, yeah. Shout out to Bill Prinzer. But like, that is, if anyone on this call is like, man, I want to go work directly for athletes and like, they're going to pay me to create content for them, like, I would say good luck. It is a very challenging thing. There are very few that are that far into it where they're personally investing in people, following them around, creating content. Trevor Bauer is one of them. Juju Smith-Schuster is one of them. Matisse, I forget that Matisse, right? That's how you say it?
Yeah, Tybalt.
Yeah, Tybalt. So Matisse. So he's doing it himself. Like he's made the investment in his own content. Like that's a job, right? Trevor Bauer works hard to create that content, but you'll remember Trevor Bauer. You will forget the guy who he pitched against instantly the minute his career is over, right? So he's trying to use this time. But selling your services straight to an athlete is a challenge because these guys, they have a limited income, limited opportunity, and they're also advised by many different people on what they should and shouldn't do. And so that's a tough thing. So what we did said, okay, it's open versus free for athletes. And then we will monetize, like when a business pays these athletes, they will take a transaction fee for making it easy for everybody to connect and do these influencer type campaigns. And so what that did, guys, is it oriented us only around helping athletes get paid deals. And that's when we started to realize like none of these brands wanted to pay athletes because they weren't sharing content. Right. So then we're like, all right, well, we need to go back to how the hell do we get these guys content? You know, because they knew that if they shared more, they'd get more, but they needed to know what to say, when to say it, how to say it. And so then we went in 2015 and went to Nebraska with Kelly Mosier. I know you guys all know Kelly, right? And said, hey, Kelly, how would you like to have any alumni of Nebraska say whatever you want, whenever you want, like Throwback Thursday photos, videos, all that. And he's like, that'd be fantastic. How much do I need to pay them? I was like, wait, it's like, what do you mean? I was like, well, how much do I need to pay our alumni? Because like, remember, openers, like we pay athletes to say stuff. So like, no, hold on. Don't think about that yet. Then I went to the alumni. I went to Amir Abdullah. I went to Prince. I said, hey, guys, you're having a hard time getting content. We're not going to create it for you, but I'm going to get you a plug. I'm going to get you all your photos and videos from your time at Nebraska so you can share them whenever you want. And then those guys asked me a very interesting question. You know what they asked me? How much do we have to pay you? Right. And so like, I know I'm getting long winded with this, but like that moment for us was this epiphany, like, oh my gosh, the athletes have the audience and distribution that the teams would love to have. And the teams have the content that the athletes would love to have. So if you provide them, like if you bring them together, then you're solving a problem. Right. But one of the biggest challenges here, and I'm going all over the place, is that what we found is that most of these teams and leagues that were starting to tap into this, they're violating every group, every licensing media deal they've ever done by just texting or airdropping or sending game footage to these guys in Dropbox folders. Like they're putting their career at risk to make sure a dude gets a plug on a yes. dope dunk. And the thing is like, that can't happen. And so like we started to say, how do we provide a way where there's a compliant framework that like you're sub-licensing the media to this athlete that they can then share, right? And Justin, I know that I'm not answering your exact question, but I want to, like these are nuances to this thing that I think matter, right?
Yeah, totally.
And so now we got to the sense where it's like, all right, now we're going to encourage that the properties, the teams and leagues start to open up that content, but they pay to use openers to make it compliant, like to cover their ass, to track the results, to make it like distribution easy. So like, I know right now in a locker room, one dude's getting airdropped, one dude's getting text message, one's getting emailed, one's getting Dropbox, one gets Google Drive DM'd. Like that's chaos. You can't, that's not a plan, right? That reminds me of 10 years ago when social media started, like you started throwing shit out in the open and figured that you get a like or two. Right. But that's the type of stuff is that we're still so early and saying like, all right, now this has got to be part of a plan and you got to bring it all together. And I think that what we're seeing is that our partners, the PGA Tour is one that comes to mind. These guys, they didn't understand what they didn't understand, right, until they made an investment in infrastructure and started to envision a world where it's like they could have every player the minute they're done with the round have the highlights licensed to them to publish on social and measure all the results. And then once they started to measure those results, it was so clear to the entire organization that this is what's going to lead fan adoption and fan engagement over the next decade is our athletes talking about us. And once they had that infrastructure, then they were able to put resources beside it, right? So like if you're in a creative department right now and you're begging for additional resources, specifically for, oh, I got to do all this stuff for photos and videos for athletes. If you don't have your ship in order, you're not going to get another captain for the ship. You know, you got to have a foundation to build upon. I think that's like where we said at Open Doors is trying to just give creative people that deserve way more resources, like the ability to measure the success of their initial work, to go back to their boss and ask for more resources. You know, and I guess that's a whole like roundabout, like how that's how you're going to get there. Is say that you can't go ask for more unless you show what you did with the current resources you're already using. And you absolutely cannot prove the value of athlete marketing if you're DMing guys and gals and just praying they post it and never measuring it. It just can't happen, right? So like that's our world, is that our job is to make sure that you're doing it in a way that sets you up for success and the athlete up for success as well. That's a total like long infomercial for Open Doors, but it's not just Open Doors. Like it's an infomercial for infrastructure. Like creative people in this entire community are the lifeblood of sports and in the digital era. Like there's not enough of you. There's enough respect for what you do, right? But there's a gap between what you have and what you want. And I think that gap can be filled with just having tools and resources that prove the value of what you're doing, right? That's where I sit.
Yeah. And you hit my next question on the head. Knowing the value of what you do in measurement, I know you're a big data guy. But how I think one of the hardest things with my time in professional and collegiate athletics, from Nebraska to the Chiefs to Notre Dame, is you never really knew what to measure against, what constituted success. So what are a few key attributes, and I know it changes over time, but as of right now, what are a few key attributes you look for in a social campaign, a paid promotion, whatever you do with your athletes at Open Doors that you would consider to be successful metrics to look at?
Yeah. My number one is engagement rate, which is always that's what I lean towards always. And it's, you know, the percentage of your audience that actually slowed their scroll and did something. Right? They either clicked like, comment, retweet, share, whatever they did, right? If you can slow the scroll in today's scroll, tap, tap, scroll, tap, tap, scroll, tap, tap environment, like then you're doing something right. Either your logo stands out and they know that you create great content, and so whatever you posted, they're going to slow their scroll, or your content stands out, which is regardless of your avatar, they want to stop because you make great content. And great content is always in the eye of the beholder, right? Is trying to understand what your audience wants and needs and what they see. And so that's important. I think that one that's growing is impression rate. And what I mean by that is like if you have 100,000 followers on Twitter and you post something and 13,000 and you get 13,000 impressions, like that means that you've done something to get 13% of the potential. Right. I know you can't control who's logged in and all that stuff. But that ratio starts to become interesting because you're trying to beat the algorithm, right? Because it's no longer the chronological feed. So impression rate, which is the number of impressions compared to your followers at the time of posting, I think that and engagement rate are two that matter quite a bit. And but I'm curious as to, you know, if you guys think there's another one out there that should be sitting higher on the charts.
No, I think engagement is a big one. And I think, you know, really measuring the value of a watch or a listen, right? I think everybody knows when you look at views from Facebook, they're very inflated, right? It's a certain amount of seconds if you scroll by. So you can look at very
TikTok.
TikTok, sure.
I think it's pronounced TikTok.
Insert platform here. Yeah, views right. That they sell against, believe it or not, in business are very inflated. But I know in the past, in past places I've talked about, we've talked about the value of a metric, right, based on the platform. Something we did at Notre Dame was we started a lot of student athlete run podcasts, and podcast was a big focus of ours. And the big reason behind that was because we felt that the metrics behind podcasting were already engaged, because you had to actively go subscribe and you had to actively download to listen. That's two steps right there. That isn't just scrolling through a timeline, right? So we felt that if a podcast got a third of the listens of a Facebook video that got, you know, three times as many views, right, the winner in our mind was the podcast, because there was more effort and that listener was probably more engaged. Now, granted, again, a lot of that was just are speculation, right? And I think that's what a lot of schools and a lot of professional teams are struggling with. People who aren't engaged with a company like Open Doors or an analytics market research type company, is there's a lot of speculation out there about what metrics mean what. And then you get into people whose jobs depend on the metrics. So if you don't have an independent agency, you know, evaluating your metrics, any metric can be made to look positive or negative in a social sphere. And I think you really have to remove yourself from that and take a step back to really think about what's important and what you're measuring against.
I think so too. I mean, it's always, and it's not one size fits all, right? In terms of your individual return on your investment of your time as a creative. And the platforms, you got to have some platform agnostic type metrics, but also platform specific. And end of the day, social media should do good in the world of sports. It should contribute to the positives that social media can bring to our lives, not the negatives. I believe that. I think that it should empower. And sports has that spot in our mind where, again, if you are able to provide a piece of content or build a brand that is a scroll-stopping brand or a scroll-stopping post, and then what you do with that time and attention is bring good, come on, there's nothing better than that. I don't care how you measure it. If you get one view, 1,000 views, or 100, like if you believe that your intention was good when you created the content and put it out in the world, like then lean in. You're going to be here a while, right? Because this industry needs more of that and will value that. And there's going to be tips and tricks and methods to break the algorithm or fix the feed, but they will be short-lived, right? And games and gimmicks can only get you so far, right? And like guys like the three of you that have been in this industry for a decade, and you know it. You know it when you see it, right? It's like, all right, well, let's take a holistic approach here and figure out like where we sit within the organization, where we sit within our community, our culture, and say, okay, let's lean into the things that are going to be lasting. And you know, metrics can move, but your purpose should be right at the center of your plan as a creative.
At the beginning, you mentioned how you woke up one day and weren't able to do what you had practiced and practiced for. Looking forward to 2020 is the year of change, with people losing jobs, getting furloughed, and there's so much that has changed. There's so much ambiguity, so much stress, anxiety that goes along with that. What can you tell people that might be going through a tough time right now when you wake up and you're not able to do what you've worked towards, and how do you keep going, and what is that message?
Yeah, I think that's for me, and in that moment where football was taken away from me, you know, I compare it's like identity crisis, identity theft, right? So imagine, and you got to go through and you got to start to pick up the different pieces and figure out what accounts you got to change and figure that out. And you know, I think that some can look at that as something that you've lost, but the others can look at it as something that you gained, right? You gained the opportunity to maybe invest your time and energy into something that you've been suppressing. And, you know, put the passion and energy that got you to where you were before this and the focus you had on that thing that described you, defined you, right? If you keep the passion and energy at the same level and just shift your focus into something else that you know you also care about, right? Then I think that you can find your way through it. And guys, all advice is autobiographical, right? What I mean by that is I literally am just talking to myself in the past. Because in that moment, like 11 years ago, I would have wanted somebody to say that to me, you know? And say like, hey, you know what? Football is gone. This thing is gone, but think about all the opportunity you now have to put into that one thing that maybe you haven't had that time and opportunity in the past. Like, and that can be a positive outcome of one of those life-changing moments that many of us had this year, you know? And that's just my story. Again, I know that I'm not unique in this. I just think that some people have a hard time identifying like, oh yeah, I've been through that. Like I've been through an identity crisis and I've already been through it. And so, yeah, it won't be the first or the last, right? But if you are prepared for those moments and realize that you've got more skill sets than what you've currently tied yourself up into, like you can find what's next if that comes to a halt.
Well, we'd love to hear your thoughts, feedback, and suggestions. So pop on over into the sports creative community on Slack and connect with us and your other fellow creatives. The quickest way to get us to stop this podcast is to not tell anyone about it. So leave us a 5-star rating and don't forget to subscribe so you're the first person to catch each new episode. Remember, the world needs your voice, so keep creating.